Hello, friends. We are continuing. We're on program number 14, page 368 of the Rays and the Initiations. We're doing a commentary on part two of that book. Rays and Initiations webinar commentary program 14, and we've been spending quite a bit of time talking about the chart on page 293 and the relationship of Sanat Kumara to the unknown God. And the Lord of the world considered as a repository of the will and the purpose of one of whom he is an expression, and we have tried to discuss which one that may be. The unfoldments that lie before human consciousness will be understood when the fact of the hierarchy is understood, the nature of its relationship to Shambhala is understood, and the spiritual nature of those who respond in reverent obedience to the slightest wish of the Lord of the world. And this will come about increasingly in humanity as the externalization of the hierarchy is instituted. It says after that, so it may take a while, and it won't affect all, but it will affect many who can think. So we reach the point where we're discussing about Sanat Kumara, his vehicle of manifestation is the planet with its seven centers, of which only three are as yet recognized by the occult student. Well, he's given us more, of course, in various tabulations, but Shambhala, his head center, the hierarchy, his heart center, and humanity, his throat center, sometimes connected, humanity is sometimes connected with the solar plexus center and with the Ajna center. And then, there, of course, there's the animal kingdom and the Deva kingdom. Deva kingdom connected with the sacral center and, well, the base of the spine center. I'm not sure that's exactly given. It has some connection with the mineral kingdom. Okay. The other four centers are concerned with evolutions which are reached, controlled, and related from one or other of these three major centers, and they are lower centers, of course, and some of the lower kingdoms are involved in this, including the Deva kingdom. The solar plexus is dominated by the hierarchy, the heart center of Sanat Kumara, and has a close relation to the Deva evolution. Okay, so not only the sacral center, but the solar plexus related to the Deva evolution, hinted at in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. The vastness of this subject will be understood by my use of the word hint in reference to what I have earlier written on the subject, and we would have to say, which is really extensive. Okay. The center which we call Shambhala controls that mysterious center which is the correspondence to that which we call the center at the base of the spine. That mysterious center within the expression of the planetary logos. This is the inadequate name given to the reservoir of threefold fire, latent and quiescent. Ida Pingala Shushumna, which is found at the base of the human spine. It is entirely inactive, except in those people who have taken the third initiation. And, you know, that is one of the hints, perhaps, about whether one has taken that, although there can be the premature activation of that center. And we would be looking in the planetary vehicle for that correspondence. Sometimes in the body of the etheric physical planet itself, the continents are seen as related to these centers, and perhaps a continent south of the equator is involved here. We've sometimes discussed it, and the question is whether the Australia area is considered to be related to the base of the spine center. But then there are higher correspondences to these centers, and they do involve kingdoms. The planetary center is related to the three fires, electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction, which are the source of the warmth, moisture, and growth of all forms upon our planet. Does it mean this planetary center? This planetary center is related to the three, sometimes there are typos, in the transference from the actual books to the CD-ROM here, and sometimes even in the books you do find them. This planetary center is related to the three fires, electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction, which are the source of life, warmth, and moisture, and growth upon our planet, of the life, warmth, and moisture, and growth of all forms upon our planet. It may seem curious and inexplicable to you, but the center of creativity is affected, and I had almost said guarded, by the center which is called the race of men. Is this creative center, the throat center? We do recall how creativity got out of hand in the preparatory stage to the creation of man, and how various unintelligent sources sought to create and created instead monstrosities instead of proper vehicles for man. The reference in the serious occult books, such as The Secret Doctrine, to the future of humanity as the savior of all the subhuman kingdoms has relation to this fact. And in a way, you see, the throat center is the first aspect of Brahma. Throat center is related to the, third ray, and is the first aspect of Brahma, and has the other four rays of attribute, under control. Rays of aspect. Aspect. No, attribute. That's correct. Attribute under control. So humanity has a very special controlling function, that the creativity will be of the right kind. And, you know, maybe in some of the breeding of animals today and the refining of their forms, some of this impulse can be seen. And there's also danger with what we call genetic modification for our own selfish purposes. I think we run a great risk of repeating what happened in Atlantis, you know, the whole idea of creating groups which would simply serve the will of humanity would be an imprisonment of certain souls. The Ajna Center of the Lord of the World is just beginning to express itself in a recognizable manner through the new group of world servers. We have to ask, is the new group of world servers actually the Ajna Center, or is it, let's put it like this, Is the new group of world servers actually the Ajna Center of the Lord of the World, or is it the means of expression of that center? Because we have to realize, of course, the centers themselves are on higher levels. Are on higher levels, on the cosmic ethers, cosmic ethers, no, let's see if we, cosmic etheric planets, at least that, and the new group of world service is very much functioning on the lower three subplanes, whatever may be their cosmic etheric content. But they are, you know, initiates largely of the second degree, and some maybe tending towards it of the first degree, and they are not liberated onto the cosmic etheric planes. This intermediate group between hierarchy and humanity, even as you might say, well, let's see, between hierarchy and humanity is the carrier of the energy which makes the plan possible. The plan of which the hierarchy is the custodian, and we might even wonder, does the hierarchy formulate the plan on the atmic plane, or does Sanakumara formulate the plan? Certainly, Sanatkumara, or at least the planetary logos, is involved with the formulation of purpose, which has been impressed upon him from the solar logos. There is a constant hierarchy of impression, and when we're dealing with purpose, we always look to a higher level being to see how we will carry out a certain type of activity or tend towards a certain destiny according to the will of that higher being. And then we form a plan or a program. We are more responsible for that to implement that purpose. So this plan implements the purpose. Purpose is a greater thing and is not so much conditioned by time and space as the plan is. The plan is related to Ray 3, the purpose more to, at least in my view, Ray 2, although it's a sort of a second aspect of the first aspect impulse. So, let's see, related to Ray 3 and purpose related to the Ray 2 aspect of Ray 1. And later, and maybe the plan is related to Ray 3 or to the Ray 3 aspect of Ray 1. Whereas the will, at least as I presently view it, is the great driving energy, the raw force of accomplishment, and is related to the first aspect of the first Ray. So this plan, and by the way, there are serious students of the teaching who disagree with me entirely and who feel that will and desire are closely related, which indeed they are, and therefore that the first Ray, the will, should be related to the second Ray and purpose to the first Ray. But I believe that purpose is related to the first Ray because it embodies the idea of pattern and of relationship. And when we deal with relationship, we're always dealing with the second Ray, which is the Ray of the divine pattern. I consider will itself to be more the great raw force of implementation. So plan is related to intention, and intention to the third aspect of the will. This plan implements the purpose, and later when the new group of world service is organized and is recognized as a living organism, it will definitely receive energy from Shambhala in direct reception, in a direct reception. Now, if it's via the hierarchy, and I guess I can ask this question, if reception is via the hierarchy, is it direct? Sometimes we talk about bypassing the soul and having a direct relationship with the monad and the triad. Well, we might also, in certain cases, bypass hierarchy and have a direct relationship with Shambhala. Maybe the is the Wesak festival, we shall find, okay, festival involved in this impression upon the new group of world servers from Shambhala and via hierarchy. And maybe it is so. The Buddha is said to be the present intermediary, and from some of the things that one can study, maybe the Wesak message of 1946, one begins to wonder whether the Buddha continues his intermediary role between Shambhala and hierarchy, or whether some function of his of course, on a much lower turn of the spiral, will be assumed by that Taurian body ruled by the fourth ray, the intermediary ray, which is called the New Group of World Servers. Well, I think there will be an arrangement. He tells us that Good Friday and Wesak will eventually die out as celebrations. At the present, it would seem certainly the Wesak as needed. This information, he says, is, I realize, of little immediate importance to you, but towards the end of the century, it will be found explanatory of much, and so did the Wesak festival. I'm going to do it that way. You know, every once in a while you need something. S-K-F. And I'll call this the Wesak Festival. I think it'll be something I hope I remember having. Okay, did the Wesak Festival already die out in 1981, as Mary Bailey suspected it might? Okay, so one is not necessarily sure about that. We've been certainly celebrating it ongoingly. There was a statement in the 1946 Wesak message that suggested another maybe 3.5 decades or 35 years, kind of suggesting that is the term that the Buddha might be with us, the whole idea of a few more decades. I remember that Mary Bailey, I was working there at the time, she began to wonder whether the New Group of World Servers might be taking over a very important function, and that would have been, of course, before, towards the end of the century. Well, we have to prove or confirm this for ourselves. Plans can change, and we've seen that with the Buddha, he has abided in his position for a long time, even when the path of earth service was not to be his path. He has remained with humanity, so this idea of remaining in the Wesak function for a little longer might be very capable. He might be very capable of that. But, you know, we cannot know. Though the Christ is the head of the hierarchy, it is Sanat Kumara, the Ancient of Days, whose ashram it truly is. So, you know, in case we have not established this in our minds, the hierarchy is the ashram of Sanat Kumara. The Christ, I am using one of his official names, and there are others. The term Christ is a term of office, I guess. Wait a second. Ho, ho, ho. I see. I see what's going on here. Yes, I see. I think I better change this to the United States and then change this. And then the keyboard will work properly. Okay. There are others. The term Christ is an official title and not a personal title. Perhaps Lord Maitreya is a little more individual, but obviously there are different names. I remember when my friend and I discussed the real name of Master DK and the derivation of that name, and he was also known by other names. Okay, so he's using one of the official names. He is indeed the master of all masters and the coordinator of the entire life of the ashram. But it is not, in a way, it is. He is the leading point of the ashram, but the ashram is that of Sanat Kumara, in conjunction with two other hierarchical officials, the Manu and the Mahachohan. So all have an administrative function. The information I gave as to the constitution of the hierarchy in Initiation, Human, and Solar was along the same line. The hierarchy is the ashram of Sanatkumara, but he has delegated his authority right down the ages to the so-called world saviors successively. And there, I guess, have been many. And the Lord Maitreya assumed this role in, well, let's say about 500 BC, when the true Buddha gave it up, or, you know, passed it to him. So anyway, the Christ has a long term as world savior. Usually it's a 2,500 year span of office, term of office. Their life expression embodied in every case the goal of the period with which they held office. And sometimes DK has given us various names of some of these great individuals who took humanity one step further. In the early days of hierarchy, millennia of years ago, neither the official directors of the hierarchy nor the masters were of the caliber which they are today. In other words, the Bodhisattva, the Manu, the Maha Chohan were of relatively lower rank. If they had been of the same caliber, they would have been far too removed from the factual life of the cycle. So any server has to be connected with the factual life of the field of service in which he works, and therefore useless for the cycle of divine life which existed at that time. So there must be sufficient rapport between hierarchical officials and those they seek to serve. And of course, we can understand now that the heads of the hierarchy in the future will be of a higher caliber than those who are presently officiating, yet for the very same reason. We will continue to advance if all goes as it should. The growth of humanity and its evolutionary status when compared with primordial and primitive man can be seen in the quality of the hierarchy today, which humanity produced, and towards which it looks for guidance and training. Hierarchy in the earlier days came from a earlier group, maybe the 104 Kumaras were involved in forming the hierarchy in earlier days, but it's hard to believe that, you know, they were not of a very, very high caliber. We don't know when it was that humanity began producing these. We know that the Christ is of the earth chain, but maybe the Manu and almost certainly the Maha Chohan are not, and yet they are still humanity from the moon chain. Or even if the hierarchical members came from the previous solar system, they would still be humanity. So some of those who individualized on the earth chain have made it into the ranks of hierarchy even now, just as the Christ has, but not many, and the Christ has what we are told unparalleled speed in his evolution, probably because he's so tremendously identified with the principle of love. So anyway, hierarchy has produced, or humanity has produced, the present hierarchy from whatever source that humanity may have come, whether the moon chain or the earlier solar system. And then human beings today look towards hierarchy as the graduates of their own system for guidance and teaching. This is an interesting point which I offer for your consideration. So, you know, the doors to hierarchy are open to such as we are, if we fulfill the requirements, and we can take our place within the ranks of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. It is, after all, the destiny of those who willingly and willfully choose the path of initiation. Not all human beings do. Never forget, my brothers, that as it is humanity which has furnished the personnel of the hierarchy, including the Christ, the first of our humanity to achieve divinity. And, you know, what does he mean by our humanity? Maybe he means those individualized on the Earth chain. We have, therefore, the guarantee and the assurance of humanity's ultimate success. I mean, there have been those of equal or higher rank than the Christ, but they were not produced by Earth chain humanity. And, in fact, the Christ has outstripped the progress even of those who are moon chain humanity and humanity from the previous solar system. So, therefore, the awe with which he is regarded by those who know. The Tibetan lists himself as among the humblest of the friends of the Christ. And that is a technical term. You sometimes have to watch, when is the Tibetan using a term that seems like an ordinary term, like, I'm your friend, friend of the Christ? And when he uses it, does he mean a technical category? For instance, rich young man and young man. He says, I was a young man then. Something had happened to him in relation to Master K.H. A rich young man, we know, is an initiate of the third degree. Maybe a young man is an initiate of the second degree, because it's a little peculiar to say, well, I was a young man when this happened. We know he's speaking of something spiritual. The three main executives of hierarchy, then, are the Christ representing the ray of love wisdom, the Manu representing the first ray of will or power, the Mahachohan representing the third ray of active intelligence. The present Mahachohan is a seventh ray soul, and no doubt a third ray monad, and that is the Master Rakvasi, Master R. And people sometimes forget to understand Master R in terms of the third ray, his monadic ray. After all, he is the Maha Chohan, and a Chohan has to be expressive of his monadic ray. So watch carefully that, and when Master R is considered, both the third ray and the seventh ray have to be considered. The three major executives are responsible to the Lord of the world for the processing of the life and impulse which condition the evolutionary process. So they are great coordinators of the activity of hierarchy along the principal ray lines, the first, second, and third. This statement is made without any further definition by me, because the whole subject is too abstruse. Oh, goodness. And it would require another treatise like that of Cosmic Fire to make it even a little clearer. So let us begin to have a sense of what it is we know and what we do not know. The processing of the life and impulse which conditions the evolutionary process. This life aspect must be closely related to the first ray, a great energy. And it has to be allocated in relation to the world of form according to the pattern which is purpose. And all of this is most abstruse and deals with plans and intentions which are far beyond our comprehension. But these three executives know something of what must be done with humanity and the lower kingdoms in order to process the life impulse which conditions the evolutionary process. Processing the life and impulse. They know something of this, and things don't just happen. They happen under intelligent guidance, and intelligent, willful, loving guidance is offered by this combination of beings, who are the great coordinators in the ashram of Sanat Kumara. Humanity can only be the recipient of this type of information after the first ray of will or power has become more active. It's all about the will aspect, I suppose, and basically DK is telling us we understand little, if anything, about the will aspect. Even disciples understand little, if anything, and So what does the average human being understand? This will take place when the work of the second ray of love wisdom has reached its next cyclic crisis point. Now, when will this be? We know we're in a 500-year cycle that ends in 2075, but in a larger sense, the Christ is returning with the hierarchy. It's a huge second ray impulse. And the age of Aquarius is upon us, and its esoteric ruler is Jupiter, presenting the second ray, and one of its decanate rulers is Venus, which is subtly presenting the second ray. So this will take place when the work of the second ray of love wisdom has reached this next cyclic crisis. Well, we are reminded of this. No man cometh to the Father except through me. So it's the development of the second aspect which leads to our understanding of the third, of the first. The crisis points of a ray are ever indicative of success and have in them the quality of joy. Maybe they are the high points of the ray cycle. Perhaps the high points of the ray cycle. The next cyclic, well, of course, in this 500-year cycle, we have reached that high point in 1825. It's a 500-year cycle going from 1575 to 2075, so 1825 was a high point, if that's what a cyclic crisis point means. But maybe there is another second-ray cycle about which we are not told, and certainly maybe in a larger sense, it does exist. We're told, for instance, even though the sixth ray is passing out, that we're in the middle of a sixth ray cycle, which still has 21,000 years to run. So obviously, it's a much larger cycle in a planetary sense, and itself is part of a fourth ray cycle, which is more connected with numbers like 40,000 and 44,000. How to decipher that is difficult. But anyway, I think the point to grasp from it is that there are the cycles that relate to the human souls and monads and to the human family as a whole, and then there are these much larger, greater cycles relating to the planet and also to the solar system. DK has talked about, you know, you can look for a second ray cycle of 5,000 years, and it would probably be connected in some way with the Bodhisattva. Of course, our present Bodhisattva, the Christ, is having a 5,000-year cycle. Another cycle is 2,500 years, or certainly 25,000, related to a great Platonic year, and maybe more related to the fourth ray, and 9,000 related to the third ray, and so forth. He deals with this a bit in a treatise on cosmic fire, just telling us that there are those larger cycles, but not telling us the rays that may be involved with them. So Stephen Pugh has done a lot of work on this, and extracted from the books in several cases the confirmation, for instance, of the number 9 being related to the third ray cycle, and the number 5, of course, he does say that. DK says that to the second ray cycle, but Stephen got these things together and put them under the eye so people could see them more easily. Mankind will then be much freer from the spirit of separateness, and a measure of peace and unity and cooperation will be conditioning human relations. Not totally right, because the judgment day is still far in the future, and until then, we will be disturbed by the Black Lodge. So there is a constant shifting in the state of the planetary consciousness, and this, though implemented by Shambhala, is produced by humanity itself. So Shambhala must respond, but humanity has a great responsibility for its own level of consciousness. its level of consciousness contributes to the what DK calls here the state of planetary consciousness. Okay, this unfolding human consciousness leads mankind eventually out of the fourth kingdom of nature and into the fifth. It's a certain group of monads which will be led into the fifth kingdom of nature. Some will remain in the fourth, but eventually all the monads that are presently in the fourth kingdom of nature will find their way into the fifth and into the sixth and on and on. The hierarchy of souls, those who realize they are souls and function as souls, and at the same time raises the level of consciousness of the three human kingdoms, because you cannot help but improve others as you improve yourself. So the idea of touch one, touch all, for better or for worse, is very, very clearly indicated. This series of happenings will remain for a long time inexplicable to man, though the results can be seen in the effect which humanity has had on the animal kingdom through domestication. And even today, scientists are noting the tremendous apparent growth of intelligence in the animal kingdom. They're just simply saying that animals are more intelligent, or seem more intelligent, even than they were 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So what's happening? You know, maybe we're noticing this, and humanity, through much of its distress, is rising and taking with them the lower kingdoms. On the vegetable kingdom through specialization and science, so on the animal kingdom through domestication, on the vegetable kingdom through specialization, a certain type of, maybe you don't call it breeding, but selection, when we cultivate certain forms in the vegetable kingdom, and the mineral kingdom through the skilled utilization of metals and the widespread use of the mineral products of Earth. That we certainly have, and the question of the skilled utilization of metals. It's interesting how we tend to use metals, and maybe no longer stone so much. And the days for our utilization of the gems maybe lies ahead. Right now they're used for ornamentation, but apparently in former times they had very strong functional purposes when occultism was more generally understood. So we're involved now largely for building purposes and for purposes of war and, yes, mostly those two. And, you know, for medical instruments and all kinds of instrumentation, we're using metals largely. But it can change with the re-arising of the ancient crystal technology, gem technology. It must be borne in mind that the Council Chamber of the Lord at Shambhala is a unit, but that the hierarchy is a unit. Well, it's characterized by the number one, isn't it? But that the hierarchy is a differentiation based on this unity into seven major ashrams and the 49 ashrams which are gradually forming. And that's very important. They are not yet formed, and certain of the ray ashrams are more formed in their sevenfoldness than others. He tells us about that in which ones have the second ray ashram is almost completely formed, but the first ray ashram very little so in terms of its sevenfold differentiation. So it's a three in one in a way in Shambhala, or kind of a six in one. There are the three Buddhas of activity, which are kind of like a trinity with the Lord of the world, but there are also the three esoteric Buddhas. And so we have the six surrounding the one, but they function in this first ray area of the planet as a unity, whereas hierarchy functions more in terms of seven foldness. I'm thinking about the monadic plane and its sevenfoldness as the first plane of form and the relation of seven to the idea of form. So in a way, there's kind of an interesting, when you look at the logoic plane, you have a one. When you look at the monadic plane, you have a seven. And they are poles, in a way, and the great, what can we call it, receptivity relates to the hierarchy, and the positivity relates to Shambhala. Although hierarchy is positive towards such forms of life as we are. The hierarchy is, however, a unity within itself, for the entire ashramic life is guarded by a ring pass knot created by its radiation. So the diversification of it does not lead to any type of fragmentation. The seven and the 49 ashrams are held together by the magnetic interplay of the whole. So love wisdom, this type of magnetism holds diverse related units together. The radiation of love wisdom, it is this radiation which affects by its quality the senior aspirants of the world, and here aspirants is being used in a higher sense, I think, and draws them gradually into relationship with itself and finally into its magnetic field. So, in a sense, since even if you have not taken the third initiation, you're still an aspirant, so disciples in this case are seen as senior aspirants. This is aided by the clarity of perception, the intensification of the livingness of the rightly oriented aspirant. Livingness. I prefer the word livingness to that of vibration so widely used in modern occultism. And when DK is telling us, well, I'm using this word, but it's inadequate. I prefer this word rather than that word. We should pay attention to the kind of reason that may be found underlying his statement. So we are being drawn towards the ashram, and the hierarchy wants us to be drawn towards the ashram, and has given tools even to us to help draw others towards the ashram. It's all a great cosmic magnet, as Master M would say. So we have a radiation of hierarchy, a radiation of hierarchy which brings about coherence. And the magnetic interplay of the whole is a protection. Magnetic interplay of the whole is a factor of integration and integrity and of protection. Using magnetism as a protection, maybe humanity is only now beginning to do that. I think we can see that in some groups that are so correctly magnetically related, the members are so related that there's a certain integrity in such a group and its invincibility from attacks from disintegrative forces. Okay, there is therefore a dual inflow into the ashram of Sanakthamara, controlled and directed by the three hierarchical directors, and let's remind ourselves, also called coordinators. So a dual inflow into the hierarchy, Ashrama Sanakthamara hierarchy. And what is this? Well, from Shambhala itself. This is a flow of energizing life, or what we might call, I love this term, unfettered enlightenment. That is the quality which exists in terms of the luminosity of Shambhala and what it knows of all things within the planetary ring past knot. We might say that not all is known within hierarchy, but all of a planetary nature that can be known is known within Shambhala. So the inflow into hierarchy let's call it this, into hierarchy from Shambhala itself. This is what we might call unfettered, unchained, completely released enlightenment. This impresses the purpose or will of the Lord of the world upon the united hierarchy in a manner incomprehensible to you. Well, we don't know much of the divine will, and hierarchy is learning something of it. But every time we get a hint as to what the purpose in the larger context might be, the purpose of our particular planet, maybe some little bit of this impression is coming through. It also creates a dynamic magnetic impulse, which enables the graded initiates through the medium of the ashrams to organize the plan and set it in motion so that purpose gradually materializes on Earth, we would say, via the plan, right? Purpose materializes via the plan. And it is a dynamic magnetic impulse which makes it possible to organize the plan and implement the plan. Very interesting. All of this coming as part of the flow of energizing life. Because the senior initiates, there are senior aspirants, senior disciples, senior initiates, okay, they all have different grades. Because the senior initiates, from the Christ down to the initiate of the fourth degree, and I suppose, well, now we learn, this includes initiates of the fourth degree, are conscious in varying ways according to ray of the eternal now and can work free from the compulsion of time. That is such an important statement because time indeed is compelling upon the personality, and any one of us knows that. We, as DK tells us, the personality feels time is short, and I'm sure we all work under that time pressure, feeling we have to accomplish certain things within a certain unit of time. They can see the impressed purpose as a more complete whole than can initiates of lesser degree and development, we might say, who are still working under the compulsion of Saturn time. It is this capacity which makes them responsive to Shambhala, where the living will of the unknown God for a period of a life cycle is seen in completeness and is already existent. We've talked about the unknown God, and, you know, from one sense, this might be one about whom not may be said, or perhaps our cosmic logos. Our cosmic logos, our containing cosmic logos, who is, in fact, but a chakra within the unknown God, if the unknown God means the one about whom naught may be said. So, and then we also, you know, we had to speak of as well, also the cosmic logos of the Great Bear, which has the rishis, each one of which acts as a monad to a particular planet in our solar system, or maybe to more than one planet. And that monadic relationship, I pointed that out last time. So, let's see what happens here. A dynamic magnetic impulse, which enables the plan to serve the purpose. And these initiates, something happens, you know, the mountain whereon form dies, the fourth degree, can be also the mountain whereon time dies. Time in the usual sense, and at least the long-term understanding can be brought through. And the dawning of the eternal, and the eternal now in infinite duration. These are probably coming in very strongly at the fourth initiation. Interestingly enough, Saturn is one of those planets that rules the fourth initiation with Mercury. Saturn is the lord of time, but something happens to our conception of time at this fourth initiation when we enter the cosmic ethers. Our normal conception of time has so much to do with our brain consciousness. DK tells us, and probably within conditions within the dense physical body of the planetary logos, the solar logos also. So the hierarchy, so there in Shambhala, the living will as a active, impulsive force is seen. And here, you know, seen in completeness here, will seems to be equivalent to purpose. Because you see the will in completeness, it's like seeing the purpose in completeness, and is already existent and does not have to be worked out in matter. The hierarchy, however, is handicapped by, in its activity by the time sense and the materialistic focus of the center from which we, center which we call the race of men. So our limitations limit hierarchy. Okay. And then into hierarchy, into the ashram of Sanatkumara, there's a dual inflow, and the other is from humanity itself. So let's look at that. From humanity, there is a constant and increasing flow of reoriented human energy penetrating into and beyond the radiatory periphery. If it's beyond, maybe it's beginning to reach into Shambhala. We've seen those arrows. I've shown them to you about the relationship between hierarchy, Shambhala, and humanity, past, present, and future. I wonder if it would be worthwhile. Let's see. We have Fellowship of Cosmic Fire, and then we have AAB diagrams. Aha. Okay. One can see the need. Well, anyway, here I've managed to find it. Sometimes things go missing. And in the past, the hierarchy had a direct relationship to Shambhala, and Shambhala to hierarchy, rather, and hierarchy to humanity. And humanity was striving a little toward Shambhala. In the present era, there is a direct Shambhala contact with humanity. We call these the Shambhala impacts, and they bypass hierarchy. Humanity is striving towards hierarchy rather than towards Shambhala. I guess it was the god kings in those ancient days which composed Shambhala. Humanity was not striving towards hierarchy, which is interesting, and hierarchy has not yet fully made its way to Shambhala in its ability to recognize and appropriate and enact purpose. And in the future, everything will be linked up, and there will be a two-way flow between all of these. This is important, and a diagram that I've shown us before. So this there is a constant and increasing flow of reoriented human energy penetrating towards hierarchy beyond the radiatory periphery. This penetrating energy, implemented by the individual aspirant and disciple, is that of intelligent activity, and little as you may realize it, it is this constant flow which aids the intelligent application of the plan to human affairs. The inflow of our aspiration into hierarchy. The science of impression, which governs the technique of Shambhala, functions through the three different centers in different ways. And we notice this science of impression, it emanates from Shambhala. And, you know, impression is one thing and imposition is another. Imposition, actually, is one of the methods of Shambhalic functioning, but impression is a little milder than imposition. And if impression can be properly grasped and enacted, maybe there's less need for imposition. DK talks about the political group and the high destiny of being an agent for the imposition of the will of God. When there is quite a bit of resistance from the lower aspects, then imposition becomes necessary. We might call it imposition through impact. So there is a flow into hierarchy of reoriented human energy penetrating into and beyond the radiatory sphere, in other words, also towards Shambhala, because humanity is also now attempting to reach Shambhala. So the science of impression, which governs the technique of Shambhala, functions in three different centers in different ways. Through the three different centers in different ways, dynamic impression from Shambhala, hierarchy, magnetic telepathy. It's not coercive, you know. Let's just say, whoa, why is that? Okay, I'll try to make this correct. Okay, just a little moment. Okay, so hierarchy is non-coercive. Sometimes when you listen to Master M, it's not coercive, but he basically says, you know, when I say jump, jump. Humanity, radiatory sensitivity. Radiation goes forth, and sensitivity is the result. It reaches into the areas. There is a radiatory reaching into the areas from which impression comes. So as our radiation increases, so does our sensitivity. Yet these three are only manifestations of the will of God as it works out in the activities of his three major centers. So dynamic impression, a manifestation of the will of God, magnetic telepathy, remember on the higher first subplane of the mental plane, response to telepathy. How does it go? The three spiritual discernment response to, well, okay, if I'm going to forget, I might as well see from the chart that Keith Bailey put together what it is. Here it is, response to group vibration and spiritual telepathy, these three, on the higher mental plane, okay. And also radiatory sensitivity, that humanity now can demonstrate is an aspect also of the manifestation of the will of God. God, the planetary logos. Well, okay, there seems to be more to be said here and more to be done, but I will say, you know, that we probably should do this and say that this is the end of a Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program number 14, and we're on page 371. Okay. And I seem to be somehow doing something strange. Okay, I want to... Right. Here we come. Okay, only manifestations of the will of God. Looks like I pressed the return button too many times. Okay. So we're on page 371, and we began. Where did we begin? We began on page, I think, 368. So that would go to 371. We managed to cover more or less three pages. So here we are. Almost there. Program, so it's 368 to 371. And since we have an extensive paragraph ahead of us, it's better to end now if we're keeping to the one-hour programs, which sometimes I do. Beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary, Program 15, pages 371 and onward. It's such extremely rich material, and as I've tried to explain, you know, I've read this book a number of times and studied it, you know, carefully and so forth, but you know, when having to go over it in this manner, word for word, phrase by phrase, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, it is things are noticed that never before were noticed, and I'm sure you will find this to be the case. You know, you might wonder, how do I have time to read a book such as this or listen to commentary on a book such as this when the world is in the condition it is? But this is the one of the great bridging books towards the actual New Age and towards the third dispensation of the Tibetan's teaching, which is due to occur after 2025. Maybe from 2025 on, but maybe after. It's safer to say after 2025, otherwise someone is going to be waiting with pen in hand on New Year's Day of 2025, and they will be the amanuensis, you know what I mean? So it's better to leave it just a little vague so that the ego, lower ego, does not seize the possibility of exalting itself by becoming the amanuensis of the Tibetan's third installment. And you can be sure there'll be more than one. Anyway, human beings are funny, a little comical at times, and we just don't see our own fallibilities that our lower ego and its pride lead us into. All righty, that will be enough for the moment, and we'll see you shortly for program number 15. Bye-bye.